So these three parables then, they belong together, the lost coin, the lost sheep, and then, as some would have it, the lost son. And we've seen, and we knew, I'm sure, previously, that these three parables, they teach us about the nature and the character of God. And this morning we reminded ourselves of the reason for these parables. You have in the opening verses of the chapter a criticism made against Jesus by the Pharisees and the scribes. And it's a serious criticism. It's accusing Jesus of religious sin, saying that Jesus is defiling himself with the company that he is keeping. And that's always a criticism that can be made against the people of God, that there is some company you should never keep, that it would defile you, that it would in some way influence you if you keep the wrong company. So Jesus teaches these parables to show his critics about the nature and the character of God. So in the first and the second parable, it's the idea of a God who searches out the lost through the idea of a shepherd and his sheep and a woman and her coins. It's God seeking out lost human beings. And then we come to this third parable. And this is a much more detailed, much more complex teaching about the character of God. So let's go back to what we said this morning. And the background of the parable is the story of Isaac and Esau and Jacob. And just cast your minds back to earlier today. Do you remember any of the comparisons we made between the parable and the story of Isaac, Jacob, and Esau? Can you remember any of them? It's a father with two sons. The younger son is the focus of attention for much of the story. There's the idea of an inheritance, both for Jacob and Esau and for these two brothers here. There's the idea of a journey. The younger son goes on a journey in both the Jacob story and here in the parable. And then there's the theme of the return home. Esau is waiting for Jacob when he returns home. And here tonight now is the elder brother and his response to the younger son returning home. Can you think back to this morning then? What's the contrasts between the Jacob story and our parable? Do you remember? There's two major contrasts as I see it. The first is that Jacob leaves poor and returns rich. And here in the parable, the younger son leaves rich and returns poor. And then in the Jacob story, he returns to face his brother. And here in the parable, the younger son returns to face his father. So that's how this parable builds on and plays with the story of Jacob and Esau. What I'm hoping is that you remember the main idea in the story of the younger son. It's how he thinks about his relationship with his father. His idea is that because of his sin, he has forfeited his sonship. He can no longer be regarded as son because of his sin. So he's got this scheme. He'll go back, he's thought it through. He's got a script in his head that he's going to stick to. And the script is, take me back as a servant. And then we saw this morning how the father receives him as a son. And then when the son just quite can't believe it, the father reinforces through these four acts that he is indeed his son. So it's about relationship then. Let's come to the elder son this evening. As you look at verse 25, especially now if you've been able to attend the Bible studies recently, this opening phrase of verse 25 will immediately take you back to the Old Testament story of Esau and Jacob. Look at verse 25. Now his oldest son was in the field. And there you have Esau in the field. He was a man of the fields. He was the one, do you remember, who was sent into the fields to get out of the way whilst Rebekah and Isaac hatched their plan for the deception of Jacob. The idea of fields then will firmly establish in our minds the parallel between this older son and with Esau. So he returns, and it's a very vivid picture, one we've thought of many times. And as he returns, he sees and hears celebration. Now, this was very unusual. It may well be that the family has been a very sad family for some time. So for them to now be celebrating seems to the older son, the older brother, something very unusual. So much so that he calls for one of the servants and asks what on earth is happening. And then you see verse 27, you've got the reply. Your brother has come, and because he has received him safe and sound, your father has killed the fatted calf. Now, what I want us to see here is this. What is this son's understanding of his relationship with his father? Because it's that idea of relationship that is key to the parable. So the younger son thinks he's lost sonship. Let's ask the older brother, what does sonship mean to you? And it's very clear because you can see the answer in verse 29. Once we've established that, I want us to have the sense of what that does to him. Seeing his relationship in these terms has an effect on him, but it also affects his attitude to his younger brother. And then the third thing we look at is the father's response to the older son. So look at verse 31. Son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. Now that's known as a dismissive statement. The father is very deliberately not engaging this older boy in a conversation about what he has. The idea is, in the original language and in the structure, the grammatical structure, verse 31 is almost incidental. It doesn't matter what the son thinks he needs to hear for himself. The main emphasis is on verse 32. It is right that we should make merry and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found. And that's a repetition of what you have earlier on in verse 24. And you know, don't you, that if any verse is repeated, then you have the importance spelled out for you. So verse 29 then, how does this older boy, how does he understand his relationship to his father? So he answered and said to his father, lo, these many years I have been serving you. I never transgressed your commandment at any time, and yet you never gave me a young goat that I might make merry with my friends. Now I want to split his words into two. So as you look at verse 29, these many years I have been serving you, I never transgressed your commandment at any time. That's the first response of the son. And in those words, you have a summary of how he understands his relationship with his father. And then the second half of verse 29, yet you never gave me a young goat that I might make merry with my friends. Now that's the first clue we have of what it's done to him. Seeing his relationship in this way has had that effect on him, inside himself, in his own heart. He has become this sort of son because of the way he understands his relationship. So that's the first idea of what it's done to him. And then the second is found in the next verse, verse 30. But as soon as this son of yours came, who has devoured your livelihood with harlots, you killed the fatted calf for him. Now that's the second clue about what's happened to this older boy. His relationship has affected him in the way that he sees his brother. His attitude to his brother is a direct result of how he understands his own relationship with his father. Now, as we work through this, there's no point to what we're doing unless we apply it to ourselves. So verse 29, let me ask you, I gave you a hint this morning. How does the older boy see his relationship to his father? Do you remember what we said? The older son has a works-based attitude to his relationship to his father. And the clue is there. Lo, for these many years, I have been serving you. So the whole idea here is the older son sees his relationship in terms of what he does, in terms of the fields and the service and the years and the work that he has done towards his father. And what Jesus wants us to reflect on is this. We have our God. We have a relationship with God. How do you understand your relationship to God? If you see it as a works relationship, then you are in danger of becoming like the older son. It's what you do that you focus on. It's how you serve. It's the sacrifice that you make. That's what we have here in this older boy. Now, I'm going to take a guess because I know people well, I hope. Some of you are tempted, I know it, to think that you feel sorry for this older son. And you're tempted to think that if it wasn't for this older son, then none of the work would have been done. And he's had these long years of unrecognized service, taken for granted. It's all very well for the younger boy to go off and spend his money and have this lovely welcome back. But if it weren't for the older son, where would all the jobs be and the work get done? Now, can I say to you respectfully, that's not the point of this parable. A parable teaches this great central truth. There's one truth, and the one truth to this parable is the nature of God and our relationship to him. And Jesus is teaching this parable to put to rest the idea that we have a works relationship to God. We do not have a relationship to God that is based on our works. And if you think that that is the case, then you miss the teaching of Jesus. It is not a works relationship. And it's a very subtle thing, but I wonder if you've noticed it. When you read verse 26, you've got this idea of a conversation between the son and the servant. And it's one of these moments when you can so easily miss the significance of the exchange. Verse 26. So he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, the servant, your brother has come. And because he has received him safe and sound, your father has killed the fatted calf. Now, as you listen to that exchange between the older son and the servant, the question is being raised in your mind, who is behaving like a servant and who is behaving like a son? And there's an irony intended in the teaching of Jesus. The servant has a greater grasp of what's going on and the significance of it than the son. The son has more of a servant way of looking at things than a son. So works. Now, as we said, we need to apply it to ourselves. How do you see your relationship to God? And it's very subtle because it comes out in different ways. So I'm sure every one of us here tonight would say, now look, we know that our relationship with God, we know it's grace, Neil. We know it's not works. But I want you to think very carefully, because sometimes it's such a subtle thing that we are not aware of it. There is a works lingering in our hearts, in all of us. So how can we check for it? Well, let's have a look at the attitude of this son then. How is seeing the relationship in terms of works, how has it affected him? Verse 29. You never gave me a young goat that I might make merry with my friends. How does that sound to you? What's in the heart of this older boy? Do you get a sense of resentment? Do you get a sense of unfairness? He thinks he's been treated unfairly. Do you get a sense that for so long he has felt badly treated? That he has looked for something from his father for himself and has not had it. And that's the first danger, it seems to me, that a works outlook has. It leads to resentment. It leads to bitterness. It leads to a sense of unfairness. If you have a works attitude to your relationship to God, then even serving him in the fields can make you feel resentful. Makes you feel unfairly treated. Makes you feel unfairly burdened. That you are the one who's ploughing on and nobody notices, nobody appreciates it, no one is thankful, it's all taken for granted. That's how it can work away in the heart of someone. We are working and no one is seeing what we do. Nobody hears the efforts that we make. And there's nobody to celebrate with us the things that we do for the Father. Now let's search our own hearts, shall we? Because as I say, for my own sake and for yours, the danger is always there that we have a works-based approach. So if we do, it affects me, the individual, like this. I can feel taken for granted. I can feel unacknowledged. I can feel unappreciated. I can feel that there is no acknowledgement of what I do. These are the dangers of a works-based approach to God. But this is the killer, what comes next, verse 30. And this is the thrust of all that Jesus is teaching you. Verse 30, as soon as this son of yours came, who has devoured your livelihood with harlots, you killed the fatted calf for him. So, because verse 30 is so important, I want to do what I can to emphasize it. You've got a party going on. You've got the oldest son who refuses to go in. He's a grown man, yet he's behaving in this way. His father comes out to him, and he refuses to go into the party. What's the problem? The older son is refusing to celebrate the grace given to the younger son. He is refusing to celebrate grace being given to someone else. And that is what Jesus is addressing this parable to. How is it possible that you could look at the grace given to someone else and resent it? What would you want? Would you want the younger son to die of starvation? Would you want him to rot in a field in a far country? Do you want him to be brought back in chains? Do you want him to have the lowest place in the family? What do you want? Now that's at the heart of what Jesus is teaching. The older son refuses to celebrate. And as you think of that for a moment, if you see somebody in the church having grace and you resent it, if you see somebody in the church being blessed and you don't like it, they have some good fortune, they might have something nice, somebody in the church has had something from God, and you refuse to celebrate, that's the sign of a works-based attitude to God. A refusal to celebrate the good news that belongs to someone else. To rejoice in someone else's experience of the good news of God. Now, take a closer look at what he does in verse 30, and you'll see two things there, won't you? You'll see, first of all, and it's well known, how he refers to his brother, this son of yours. He wants to distance himself from this person. The very thing that the Pharisees and scribes were doing, they were distancing themselves from the tax collectors and the sinners. The thing they want Jesus to do, distance yourself from these wretches who are all around you. Here's the older son distancing himself in the way described. But look then at what happens. And isn't it so interesting? He has devoured your livelihood with harlots. There's a sign of works. When you say to God, God, don't you know what he's done? Don't you know what Neil's up to? Don't you know what these people are really like? It's no good blessing them, or it's no good smiling on them, and it's no good being gracious to them. Don't you know what he's done? And a sign of a works attitude is a delight to point out to others what you think are their sins. When you want to disclose the wrongdoings of those around you. And that's what you see in this elder son. Don't you think the father knows what the younger son has done? He knows how he's spent his money. He knows how he's lived. And the younger son has repented for it. But when you think of God in terms of what you do for him, then it has that corrosive effect on our spirits. And that's so important here, everyone. Thinking of God in terms of works, it eats away at you. It eats away at your heart. It eats away at your spirit. It eats away at your generosity. It eats away at your compassion. It eats away at your heart when you have conceived, and you can do it for many years, when you conceive of your relationship with God in terms of works. It's a very destructive thing. So here's the elder son. Works. He then feels that he's been denied his entitlements. And then it begins to corrode his spirit so that he can't celebrate the grace that has been shown to his brother. So let's end with 31 and 32. And I've already told you that 31 is a dismissive, transitive statement. We pass over it quickly. It's not about the older son. It's not about what's true of him. It's not about what he has. All those things are taken for granted. The older son has as much grace, as much inheritance, he has as much of his father's love as is possible. That's not the issue. The issue is in verse 32. And it's the issue of rejoicing. Rejoicing is the third time the idea of rejoicing is there. Making merry and be glad. It's this entering into the joy of God himself when grace has been given to someone else. Can we enter into it? If God gives common grace to someone else, so they have a nice car or a nice house or they have a good holiday somewhere, do we enter in and rejoice to the grace given to them? How about saving grace? This is a real killer, isn't it? What if God saves somebody, but it's not your son, or it's not your granddaughter, but God saves someone else in the fellowship? Can we enter in to that grace given? Can we celebrate? Do we rejoice? Do we share in the joy of God as he welcomes someone else through faith in Christ? What if God in his grace receives someone who's behaved badly, someone who's done something wrong, someone who, as a member of the congregation perhaps, behaved really badly, but they've come back and God has received them? Do we celebrate? Do we rejoice? Do we share the joy of God? Persevering grace. When God is giving grace that we continue. Do we celebrate? Now, here's how we'll end. This parable is a call to rejoice in the joy that God himself experiences when God shows grace to someone else, when he shows his goodness, when he shows his favor, when he shows his compassion, when God shows his kindness to someone else. The key to the older son is, what about me? Haven't I served you? Haven't I been loyal to you? Haven't I been faithful to you? What about me? Now, this isn't easy, but it's focusing our attention on the joy of God. What if God blesses another congregation more than us? Are we going to rejoice in it? Are we going to rejoice in every expression of the grace of God? Well, it comes to this. Do you have a works approach? Is that how you understand your relationship to God? Or do you see that in his grace, God has called you to be a son? You are a son whether you work in the fields, or you're a son whether you starve in the fields. You are always a son, and all that this God has been given to us, and he is always with us, and the call is to rejoice with him. Let's pray, shall we?